Welcome to the Links to SQL Talk. My name is Rob Kaiser. I am an independent consultant and a Microsoft MVP. As you can see, my email is rob@row-5.com. Link to SQL can be set up and used with very little coding, but that would not be a very interesting talk. So what I wanted to do was to take a more manual approach and give you some idea of what is happening behind the scenes. In order to do that, we are going to show how to set up or wire up SQL and Link. We will be showing a few Link queries, but that will not be the focus of the talk. You might be wondering why Link to SQL is important. It is really Microsoft's first showing of using Link with a real database, and is really just the first step into their next generation of data access methods. The next step would be Entity Framework, which builds heavily on the work done with Link to SQL. If you understand Link to SQL, you will have a basic understanding of Entity Framework. Link to SQL will only work with SQL, so if you are interested in working with other databases, you should look into Entity Framework. I also want to mention some tools that will help you when working with Link to SQL. We will see some of those at the end of the talk. One tool I will be using throughout the talk while doing the demos is not limited to Link to SQL, and that would be the SQL Profiler. If you don't use this now, you should look into using it. It can really help in tracking down issues with your database. All right, so first thing we want to do is set up your code. Now, before you can write any Link to SQL, you'll have to add a reference to the system.data.link reference. If you were to add a Link to SQL component through, you know, add new item, this reference would be added for you. But since we are setting things up manually, we'll have to add it ourselves. The other thing you'll want to be aware of is the system.data.link namespace and the system.data.link mapping namespace, which you'll want to have in your using or imports section. The real heart of Link to SQL is the data context class. It tracks changes made to the retrieved entities and maintains an identity cache. Now, the identity cache is used to guarantee that when entities are retrieved from the database multiple times, they're represented by the same object instance. The data context is designed to be used for a unit of work, which is loosely defined. Basically, you define it in your code, what you want the data context to do at any given time. But the data context is fairly lightweight, so you can instantiate and dispose it within your code quite frequently, and it will not really affect the performance of your code. And of course, the data context is where the magic happens. That's what makes everything work. So let's take a quick look at the data context. It's really simple to work with, and we'll look at some code now. This is a program, so it doesn't look at this throughout the talk for this portion. So the thing we want to look at is over in our references, we do in fact have our system.data.link reference set up here, and you can see that I'm also adding the namespace system.data.link and system.data.link.mapping right here. Okay, the way that we work with the database context or the data context is we need to have a SQL connection set up. So the easiest way to do that is with a simple SQL connection string, which you should be familiar with when you work with any of the other methods of accessing data in your code. So what we're going to do now is we're going to just, you can see, set up a SQL string that connects to the local data source. We're going to use the Northwind database, and we're going to give this an application name of Firestart. And the reason why I'm doing that is so that it's a little easier to see in the profiler what it is that's happening. after we've got the connection string set up, we just have to instantiate a new data context using that connection string, or that SQL connection. And if we were to run this, there's not too much to it, but we can do that, and we can see that, yes, in fact, when we get down to here, if you look down here at our data context called DB, that when we execute this, it does in fact create something in here anyway. And you can see basically that it did do something. Now we're not using it with anything yet, so it doesn't really show us much as far as what we can do with it. So that's as simple as it is to set up a data context for your code. And as I said, this is really the main piece. This is how the whole thing works. That was the data. Okay. Now, we need some way for the data context to talk to the database and to understand what the tables are and how they work. And what we have to do for that is we have to create some entity classes for our tables so that we can actually make that connection between the data context and the database. So, the entity classes are basically just a class that has an attribute associated with it that tells the data context that it is something that it should look at. And what it does is it creates a storage area for your data from the database, so when the records come back it knows where it can put it. It also helps to track changes along with the data context. So let's take a look and see what is involved with creating an entity class. And again, this is not that difficult to do. So let's create a customer table and take a look and see what we're doing here. So here we have our customer class. Okay, and you can see that we have decorated this class with an attribute called table. And what the table attribute does is it tells the data context what the name in our database of the table is. So in this case, we're going to associate this customer class with the customers table in the database. The other thing you'll notice is we also define the columns we want to use. Now, if you look, and if you're familiar with the Northwind database, you'll notice that these are not all the columns that are part of the customers class. These are only a few that I want to work with. You'll see that we can assign a primary key to one of the columns. In this case, we're using the customer ID. And the other thing to notice that's interesting is we don't have to necessarily call the columns the same thing that we would call them in the table. So in this case, we've got we've renamed the region section, or the region column, I should say, and we're going to call it state in our class. Okay. So once if we want to use that particular table, we have to make the link between the data context and the class and the database so that everybody's understanding what we're trying to do and working with the same set of data. So to do that, all we have to do is set up a table, and we're going to call our table inside of our code customers, and we tell the data context to go out and get the table from the database. And we pass it in that entity class that we defined above. So that's all that's required to actually tell the data context that we want to use the table and what it's called. Now, doing this part doesn't really get us back any data. So what we want to do is we actually want to query that table and return some data. So this is an example of a link query that will go out to our customers table, and it will check, it will return back values or records that have a value of USA in the country column and a value of WA in the state column. And remember that there is no real state column in the table, so what's happening is there's a translation going on when we do this query. And what we're going to do is we're just going to return the customer ID, the company name, and the city. Now, if we were to run this just as it is, of course, it's not going to actually do anything, because when we set up a query in Link, it's just telling Link what we're going to do when we actually work with it. So what we have to do is step through that query, or step through that table using that query, and return back our rows. All right, so if we run this now, what it'll do is it'll go out, it'll make the connection to the customer table, it will take this query and pass it on through when we do this for each loop. And this is where I like to take a look at SQL Profiler to see what's going on when we run this. So if we start this up, and we're paused at that line, and we bring up the SQL Profiler, and we start that running, and let's step through our code. So now we've gotten to the point where we've made our connection. The data context understands what we're working with, and now we're going to actually create the link query. And now that we've done that, there's one line that gets sent over to the SQL server, but it's not our query, it's just a sort of a setup that says I'm going to start doing things. And now if we go through the for each loop, you can see, and this is where it gets interesting, again, nothing happens until we have to figure out what the iterator is for our for each loop, at which point it actually does go out and it passes to the SQL server a query. And this is the query it passes over down here. So you can see that it's doing a select customer ID, the company name, and something called city from customer, where the country is equal to the country code that we pass in, which is USA, and you can see that down here, and the region is equal to WA. So it does the translation to say, yeah, I really want to name region city when we pass it through to the SQL server, so you don't have to worry about that part. So then if we let this continue on through, we'll see that it will return back a few things, and it's done. So if we were to run this again real quick without using without taking a look at the profiler, and just so we can see the actual results, and there's the results. So it came back with three records that were in USA and Washington State, and this is the customer ID, company name, and the city. So, one other thing we can do is we can take a look and see what we're passing, or what query is getting executed by the SQL server. And we can do that by asking the data context to give us the query that's being passed over to it. Okay. So if we do that, and take a quick look at what's going on, what we can see is down here at the bottom, it shows us the select statement that we could see in the SQL Profiler. Now, the thing that you're seeing, you're not seeing here is what are the values of these parameters? And the query doesn't have that because it's not part of the command that's being executed. So in order for us to see that, we can actually take a look at the log that is happening for this data context. So if we want to look at the log, we can tell it to go send its output to the console in this example. You could send it to wherever you wanted to. And if we run this now again, we'll see that at the top is what we saw in the SQL profiler, more or less. We've got the select statement here, and you've got your parameters, and the P0 parameter is USA and the P1 parameter is WA. Okay, so that's pretty much how we can get data back from the SQL server using Link to SQL. Again, we've set up the data context and we've set up our entity, which is the customer table up here, and we've told it how it looks, and we told it that we want the region to be called state, and that's pretty much it. Okay, now there's more we can do with entities. We can also use something called inheritance with our entities. And that's something interesting that you may or may not run into, want to use, but just to give you a completely contrived example, if your DBA set up a table called phone, and it can hold work phone, cell phone, and home phone, for example, and it's in one table, but you in your code wanted to treat it as three separate tables, you could use inheritance to make that change. Associations are used for when you have relationships between tables. The data context has to be told about those relationships. It doesn't ask the database for that information. So what that means is you can set up you can set up your relationships, or you don't have to tell the data context about the relationships if you don't want to. So let's take a quick look at that, those examples. So let's go up and create a phone class here. And what I want to show you is that I have created a phone class in the database, and it holds, as I said, a type, a phone number, and a carrier, which would be used for if you had a cell phone. If you didn't have a cell phone, the carrier wouldn't be really useful. And I have three records in this one right now, home, cell, and work. And what we want to do is we want to use this table, but we want to treat it as if there were three separate tables. So we create the phone table, the phone entity, just like we did before. So I'm creating this class called phone, and I'm telling it that it's a table called phone in the database. And we have the primary key, and we have the type, and we've got the number. Now again, what you can see here is that we're not really using all the columns in our table just yet, but we also have this other thing called discriminator. Now if we look back up here at the top, you can see where we use this inheritance mapping attribute, and what we do there is we tell it what the code is that we want to look at or look for. So we want to have a home, a work, and a cell for different codes, and what we're doing is we're giving it the type of entity we want to call. So the home phone is simply phone, the work phone, when it's work phone, and when it's cell, it's a cell phone. And the default value is the simple phone at the top. So, what you have to do after you've set up these inheritance and you have your class, phone class, you also have to set up your other classes. So we had a work phone, so we need a work phone class, and that inherits from phone. And we have a cell phone class that inherits from phone. But the cell phone class, we want to know what the carrier is, so we can add a column to our cell phone class called carrier, and that will only show up in the cell phone record when we're getting the data. So what we want to show now is well, how would we actually use this? So let's take a look at some queries here. And we would treat it just like we would just like we did with the customer table. Remember up here in the customer table, we created this link here between the customer entity and the data context. So we're going to do the same thing down here. And we're going to create something called phone. And we're going to associate that with the data context. Now we don't have to associate the cell phone or the work phone with the data context. Associating the phone by itself is enough because the other ones inherit from that. So you have a couple options on what you want to do when you want to do a query against this. So in the first example, what we're doing is a typed query. So we're saying yes, from the cell phone table, get everything. And this is another example where we can simply say we want to query the phone table where C is of type cell phone. So those are the two different ways you can do your queries. One is typed, one is using a filter where we specify what type of data we want to return back. So if we look through this, in the for each loop, we can simply use the query typed, the query that is of type query, and return back the data directly. And notice we just do a var row to get back a row of type cell phone. If we don't use the typed query, we use the filtered type style query where we specify what type of phone record we want to return, we have to do a cast. So doing it the first way is probably better, but you can use a different way if you need to. So you can see here that we have to cast the row as of type cell phone, and we return back the values. So if we were to run this, and let's just get rid of a few of these other things that we did up here so we don't get ourselves confused too much. Comment that out. Comment that one out, and we'll comment this one out. And let's put some breakpoints in here. And we'll take a look. So, as you can see, it returned back the two records that we had in our database that were of type cell phone. That was 4321 was the cell phone record. So now let's do it with the breakpoint in place. Just end that one first. And let me stop and restart this just in case. Okay. And what I want to look at is the profiler that's happening. And let's clear out everything first. So we're not confused, and we'll step through this. So as you can see, We've set up our queries, and now we're going to do the first one, which is a typed query. So when we execute that, you can see that what it did was it set the query up and put the type of cell in for one of the parameters, so where type is equal to cell. So it did that for us. If you look at the code, all we did was say select everything from the cell phone table. It knows to go in, actually query the phone table, but put a type in of cell. Now if we look at the next one, it looks very similar, and in fact I believe is almost identical, except that in this case it included one extra piece, did it? Well, it rearranged the returning values. So basically it's the exact same query with the same WHERE clause, and it's basically doing the same thing from the SQL side of things. So you're not saving anything on that end. All you're doing is making your code a little easier to read on the front end if you use the query type instead of the query filtered style. So let's just let that finish up. And that's that. Now the other thing we want to look at was the associations, right? So what we want to do is we're going to put the orders class in, or orders table in, and we need to add one thing up here to our table, and let's go through some of this stuff. So again, the orders table simply is an orders class, and we specify decorate the class with the attribute for table. We have a primary key, and in this case primary key is very important because you need to have those primary keys set up when you do associations. And down here you can see that we've got another attribute called association. And what we're telling it is we're going to store it in this this variable called customer, and these are the this is the key that's used to reference the customer ID, and we have to specify that it's a foreign key. And then we have our customer property right here, which holds the customer information. And then we set up the reference. Okay, this an entity ref is for the child side of a parent-child relationship, one-to-many relationship. So then we have the entity set, which is the other side of the equation. And what we do is we tell it that the other record is using the customer ID to link things back together, and we tell it that we are working with the orders table, or the orders class, which is called orders. So we look at using that in some queries. Let's go down here. And uncomment this code here so we can take a look at it. And once again, we specify we instantiate the orders object here as of type, you know, order, table order, and we associate it with the data context so that it knows what's going on. So what we're going to do here is I believe that needs to be that way. What we're going to do here is we're going to query from the orders table, but we're going to look in the customer table for where the country is equal to USA. So what that means is that we should be seeing some sort of join in our profiler when we run this. So let's take a look at this one, and I will get rid of these for the time being, so again we are not confused with the output. To take a look at what happens when we run through this. Okay, this is where we're creating the orders, and there's the code that we are executing right there. So you can see we're selecting the order ID, which is what we're asking for over here, from the orders table. And we're doing a left outer join on customers where the customer country is equal to USA. And we're joining on the customer ID in both the orders table and the customers table. So notice we didn't do any actual joining up here. We just specified a different table when we did our where clause. So as we step through that, there should be plenty, yes, there are plenty of results that we can look at. And let's just let it go through to there. So if we take a quick look at the output, we can see we return quite a few IDs in that query. Now this is something else you might want to do, where we're going to query the customers table, but we're going to get only those customers that have orders counts greater than 20. So it's another way we can do our you know, joins and get some interesting results back. So if we take a look over here at what got generated and sent to SQL, you can see that we've got they were selecting all the customer data from the customers where. And then we have a subquery down here that says select count from orders where the customer IDs are equal and the count is greater than 20. Okay, so that was a very, you know, this became a fairly complex SQL command with a very simple link query. Now, what we didn't get back, if you notice here, all we're getting back at this point are the customer IDs, or the customer records, I should say. We're not getting back the order detail that we may want to get. So in order to do that, we would have to step through each of the customers that were returned and query the orders table again with that data. So that's what this example is continuing to show here, is that we're stepping through and getting back all the orders for a particular customer. So as you can see, we just looked at the first one. There's plenty, I'm sure, that will come back. But it did a select on from the orders table. And we return back wherever the customer ID matches from the customer table. So we went through each of the customer result sets, or the results we got from the initial query of greater than 20, and we're returning back every order that matches. And we can just let that continue on. So those are some examples of associations. Okay. All right. Now the interesting thing about queries within Link to SQL, or actually Link in general, is that you can manipulate the queries as you go along, because the queries themselves don't actually execute anything. You can think of it almost like a string that you're modifying. So what you can do is, if you wanted to have a situation where a user would query a database and then refine the query based on the previous query information, you can do that by simply modifying or manipulating the query as you go along. So in this quick example that I have on the screen now, it's initially you query all the customers, and then you refine it a little bit by specifying a city of Philadelphia. So there's also two interesting things that you can do, and those are skip and take. Now, you have to be careful with this, because, as we'll see in a moment, because I have some examples of this, that this can be very, very difficult for the SQL Server to manage, and it can be you can take a performance hit if you're not careful with these things. So let's take a quick look at the skip and the take. So normally what you would do is, if you're going to use skip and take inside of a paged result set, for example, you would use them together as this is showing here. So what we're doing is, we've got from the orders where customer country is equal to USA, we're going to select an order ID, but we're going to skip the first five and take the next five. So we're going to take not the first five, but the second five of the data. So if we were to take a look at this in our code here, let's just, we don't need these. And execute this. And let's clear this so we get a little clearer view what's going on. Here. All right, so here we are at our skip and take query. So if we take a look at this and we get to this point here, we'll take a look at the query that it gets sent over, and you can see that it's not exactly something that you may want to do on a fairly frequent basis, because what you're doing is, you're going through the entire order table and getting everything back, not returning everything, but you're having SQL query the entire order table, and then querying it, joining it with itself based off of a row number that gets added from the first query. So you can see this is how you'd probably do it if you were going to just write some SQL to get the data back, but it's not exactly something you want to do, because every time you go and get another page, you're having to go through the entire orders table to number it, and then returning back just that range of numbers or of rows that you want to return back. So it's there, it can be used, but it's something you have to be careful of and not overuse. So let's just let that finish out. Okay. All right, so up till now, what we've been doing is simply returning back some data from our database. But what we really want to do, usually, is we want to be able to manipulate that data, update it, insert more data, delete some data that's already there. So this this part of the talk, we'll talk a little bit about updating, inserting, and deleting data. The main thing to remember when doing this kind of work with Link to SQL is the submit changes command. So what you want to do is, every time something changes or something happens, you want to submit those changes to the database. So on an update, that's pretty much all you have to do. When you do inserts or deletes, you have to insert the new record first You have to create a new record, insert it into your entity, and then you can submit changes and update the data. And the same thing happens with the delete. You have to delete a specific entity and then submit the changes to actually make it occur. So if we take a look at a different set of code, and what I wanted to do was just have something separate topic here. One has gotten rid of most of the extraneous stuff we were looking at earlier. And what we're going to do is I want to show that I'm using the using command to instantiate the data context, which is probably something you should do anyway. What we were doing before, because it was just an example, it was not the best coding practices. This is a much better way to do it, because then it disposes of it properly at the end. So what we're going to do is we're going to we have our database here, and we're going to get a customer record back where the customer ID is equal to France. Now this way of querying is called a lambda expression. It's basically a shorthand way of getting back a record, and this command here is specifying a single record. So it's not, I don't want to focus too much on this, but basically it's just a little easier, shorter way to do the same thing we were doing previously. So what we're going to do is we're going to get back that customer, and then we're going to change the contact name to Rob Kaiser. So if we were to look and do a query on Franz, we'd see, I believe it's set for one of these names down here. I don't remember what I left it at. We could probably do a quick check over here in our customers, and make sure I know which one I'm getting here. Customer ID equals Franz. I believe that's it. Let's take a look. Okay, there we go. And the contact name is Paolo. So we're going to change that in our code. And how we're going to do that is we're going to simply return back the customer record, and then set the contact name equals something different. And then we're going to do the submit changes. So let's just run through this real quick. Okay, so this is where we set up the data context. This is where we're going to return back our record. Now, old customer, oldcust.contactName, you can see down here, is what we expected it to be. You can also, if you wanted to, take a look. Here's all the parts of the customer. Okay. And what we're going to do now is set it to my name and then submit the changes. Now, if we can go down to the bottom of this, take a look, we should see an update command, and there it is. So we set the contact name equal to the parameter that got passed in, where the customer ID and everything else is equal to the existing data. Now, it does it that way so that if you had multiple people updating a record, it would understand and know that there were multiple updates would have occurred, and it would be able to return back an error telling you that you should probably do something, either get back a more recent copy of the data or discard your changes. If we look at the database itself and re-execute this query, we'll see that now, in fact, the contact name has changed, and it is all done. So as soon as the submit changes occurred, that's when the update occurred. So now what we're going to do is we're going to look at adding a new record. So we're still running our code, but we'll pause it here for a moment so we can take a look at what's going to happen next. So in order to add a new customer, we have to create a new customer. So we're going to create a new object that is of type customer, and we're going to assign it different these fields, and then we're going to insert on submit the new customer to our customers table, and then we're going to submit the changes. So just to make sure that I haven't done this already, let's take a look and make sure that fires is not part of our existing customer database, and we should back and we don't get back anything. So it doesn't exist yet in the database, so we're going to add a new one. Let's just let it continue on here. So that's creating the new customer, and you can see down here, there it is, and it's all set to different things. To the fields are all set. Now we're going to, and let's take a quick look at our profiler, just so we know what's going on over here. Obviously, creating the new customer didn't do anything to the database because there was no link between the new customer and the database. So this is where we're going to actually do that. So if we step through that next step, we've associated the new customer with our customers table, and notice nothing's happened to the database yet until we hit the submit changes. So once we run that through, it actually goes out and it does an insert, and it inserts the values that we specified into the database. So if we take a look at the database again and execute this, we can see that yes, in fact, we have added that record. So now, of course, we decide we don't really want that record, so we're going to remove it. So what we're going to do is we're going to create it's just like we did before in the update. We're going to query our database for that record we just added, and we're going to put that into Delcust, and then we're going to issue a delete on submit of that record, and then we're going to submit the changes. So again, if we want to take a look and get a better idea of what's going on and when it's happening, there's our getting the data back, and cust does have a value. There it is. And it's what we asked for. Now, there's something interesting to notice. We did not actually go back to the database for that customer. And why is that? That's because it knows that we're getting back something we already have. We already have this record in our data context because we created it up here and we submitted it. So because of that, it's basically using this, the same reference to the data that was done up here. So we didn't actually have to go back to the database and get it. When we do the submit changes, of course, it will have to go back because we're actually doing a delete. So there's our delete that's executed. And if we, of course, go to the database and it re-execute this query, it is no longer there. So we've gotten rid of it. So that's how working with insert, update, and delete. Obviously, it's a very simplified view, but you get the idea of how to actually work with that. Right, some of the tools that are useful to work with or to use to work with linked to SQL would be SQL Metal, the DBML editor, which really haven't looked at very much, but we'll show in a second, and a link pad. A link pad is just generic link to anything. However, it is interesting to see how the interpretation of your SQL commands would be turned into link commands and vice versa. So that's a useful utility to get. You can query for it on the internet. Just look for LinkPad. There's a free version you can download, you can use. If you want to pay for it, what you get is the IntelliSense. So you can use that, and it'll understand, and the IntelliSense helps you out with your queries. So let's take a look at SQL Metal for a second. SQL Metal is a command line tool that allows you to build either your DBML, you can generate code, or you could generate XML. So let's take a quick look back here at this last example we were working with, where I did use a DBML, and all I did was I grabbed two tables from our database and I put it into this palette here, just dragged it in here. And it understood the relationship here, so it set that up for me. And what it does is it generates a bunch of code. So if we take a look at the code that gets generated, here is all the code that gets generated for our customer classes. Okay, so you can see they go into a little bit more detail into setting up columns, setting up tables, associations are here, and a few other things. But basically, just those two tables alone, we did it in just a couple lines of code. They have taken 833 lines of code to do the same thing we just did real quickly. Now, obviously, there's a lot more here, and this is probably the way you want to use it. But the point is that it is generating quite a bit of code for you to work with. Well, and that's just using the DBML editor. What SQL Metal does is the same thing. You can have it generate code directly. You can have it generate this C-sharp code or VB code or whatever directly without having to go through the process of using the DBML editor to set things up. You can also create a DBML from it. So you could use SQL Metal to create the DBML and import that into your project and use it that way. It's fairly simple to work with. You set up, you use the command line that's part of Visual Studio, and it's in the path for that, so you don't have to do anything special. I have an example here where I'm calling SQL Metal, passing it the server, which is the local server, the database, which is Northwind, and I'm asking for a DBML to be created in this location. So if I were to execute this, it goes out, reads the database, creates the DBML. It's fairly quick. It's all done. And if we take a look, there is the file it just generated. Now, if you want to do something like create some code, instead of creating the DBML, you can do that as well, and all you have to do is specify code instead of DBML, give it a location, and it can go out and it can create the code that would go with it, and there it just popped in there. So if we were to take a look at this, just say no for right now. There's the code it generated. And this one, because this is everything in the database and not just those two tables, is that we're now up to 3,702 lines of code, as you can see that down here, that got generated. So this went through everything. Now, the nice thing about using SQL Metal, as opposed to using the DBML class, is that, or the DBML editor, is that as things change, so as your database changes, if things were to if your DBAs were to add stored procedures or add tables or whatever, you would just have to rerun that command. It would go through and generate a new either DBML or C sharp code from the existing database as it stood then. Using the DBML editor, you have to go in and find the tables that got changed and add them into your code. And it's a little bit more tedious and prone to error than doing it the other way. So if we wanted to, we could go in here and pick up from the Northwind database more tables. So if I wanted to bring in the phone table, all I have to do is just drag it in here. It goes out, reads the from the database, figures out what's the primary keys are, etc., comes in and just adds it in. And then if we save this, what'll happen is that the class for our code would have been updated, and we would be able to see, if we can find it. Well, there's some partial classes for the phone. But you can see it added the phone to our tables. All right, so that is pretty much it. The SQL metal command does have a help, so I just simply type in SQL metal. You'll get back all the parameters that it'll take, as well as some examples of how to use it. It bases the code that it generates off of the extension. So we put in Northwind.cs, that's going to generate C sharp code. If we put in VB, it would create VB code. With that, I believe we are finished. Thank you for listening and watching. And if you have any questions, you can certainly send me an email, and I'll try and get back to you. And that's it. Thanks.